appreciate that good prayer and a good song that was led. Again, as I already mentioned, I'm thankful to be here. I hope all of us, and I'm sure that we do, appreciate the fact that there is absolutely nothing better that we could be doing on the Lord's Day than to be busy about our Father's business. And so I appreciate you being here. I know we have a number of people who sure would like to be here, but just cannot be here because of health problems, and so we need to continue to remember them in our prayers. We ended last week on number 22 as we talked about if any man obey not our word. And I think we finished that point. I know that near the end, the question was asked, you know, how do we fulfill the responsibility that God has given us to withdraw from the unfaithful, and at the same time, how's that carried out? What does that look like when it comes to family members? And that's not easy. And I just made the point at the end that, and we were right at the end of the class, that just because a congregation, and it is a congregational act, withdraws from someone who is unfaithful does not relieve me of the responsibilities that I have in the roles of a family, whether it's a husband or a father, whatever the case may be. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that we shirk the responsibility that God has given us to try the best we can to bring about the result of it, which is to bring back the wayward Christian. To reject the writings of the apostle is to reject God. That's based on 1 Corinthians 14:37. In the context of 1 Corinthians 14, Paul's dealing specifically with what? Yeah, the regulations, some rules about how those were to be exercised. And it makes that great statement of 1 Corinthians 14, verse 33, that God is not the author of confusion, but of peace. And so that's the context of it, but he's simply saying, if any man thinketh himself to be a prophet or spiritual, let him acknowledge that the things that I write unto you are the commandments of the Lord. And these are commandments. They're not optional. They're imperative that we do them. So how sad it is that many congregations today do not love the Lord, nor their brethren, as they should, to practice church discipline. Number 21, from 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse 16, if any man have widows, it's been a very divisive topic in years gone by, even to the present day, but especially the issues that arose in the 50s, 60s, and into the 70s, of which I didn't go through firsthand, but a lot of brethren did. Some of you went through those issues that came up during that time. Throughout time, God has expressed His interest in the care of widows. In the Old Testament, God made sure that two groups of people were cared for specifically, and it was who?
Orphans and widows.
Yeah, the fatherless, orphans, and widows. The psalmist declared God as a father of the fatherless and a judge of the widows is God in His holy habitation. God commanded Israel, ye shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. We're going to read through these, and I assure you we're going to go back and make some talk about it and make some application and talk about why, though it should not be, but why that is a very controversial, divisive, misunderstood, abused, however you want to phrase it, topic among brethren. I'm not talking about people in the world, but I'm talking about members of the Lord's church who don't see eye to eye on those things, and we ought to. In Deuteronomy 24, 17 through 21, and 26, verses 12 and 13, those passages deal with what? To have time to go back and look, I hope you did. But as you're turning there, if you were to sum up the book of Deuteronomy in one sentence, how would you sum it up? The word Deuteronomy has reference to a second law given. That doesn't mean that he's giving them a different law, but the book of Deuteronomy is all about an admonition before the children of Israel go into the promised land. Moses is not going to be permitted to go because he failed to sanctify God in the eyes of the people. And before they go, when they're in the plains of Moab, before they go into the promised land, Moses is going to go over the law with them and admonish them. When you go into the land that God has promised you and that you're surely going to have, don't forget to obey God. And that's what really the book of Deuteronomy is about. There's a lot of things in the book of Deuteronomy, but really it's about admonishing the people. Deuteronomy 28, the blessings and the curses. Obey God, you'll be blessed. Disobey God, you'll be cursed. And so in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 17 through 21, if somebody will read that nice and loud for us, please.
Shall not pervert the judgment of the stranger, nor the fatherless, nor a widow's raiment, nor take a widow's raiment to pledge. But you shall remember that you was a bondman in Egypt, and the Lord thy God redeemed thee thence. Therefore I command thee to do this thing. When you cut down your harvest in thy field, and have forgot a sheaf in the field, thou shalt not go again to fetch it, for it shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow, that the Lord thy God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beatest thy olive tree, thou shalt not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. When you gatherest the grapes of thy vineyard, thou shalt not glean it afterward, for it shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. And you shall remember that you was a bondman in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this thing.
Was it optional? No, therefore I command you. You said that more than one time in this passage. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment, because if you've not experienced someone using that passage to go back to the Old Testament to try to prove an argument, then you will. You keep talking. We'll get to that in just a moment. I'll show you the argument that is used, and then I'll show you how to use that passage to show that that will not support the argument that they use that verse for. But God always commanded and had care for widows and orphans, and He put those things in place. And then you can look at Deuteronomy 26, verses 12 and 13. But in 1 Timothy chapter 5, Paul has been discussing the care for widows. So in the Old Testament, the point I like to make is in the Old Testament, the care of widows and the fatherless was addressed. There's no doubt about that. And in the New Testament, the care of widows and the fatherless are addressed. Now, there's a lot of place in the Old Testament, but we just looked at that Deuteronomy 24 passage. And in the New Testament, there's at least a couple of places where he talks about that. And one of them is 1 Timothy chapter 5. And 1 Timothy is written to who? It's written to Timothy. And one written to a group of God's people is written to an evangelist to encourage him to do the work of an evangelist and to encourage him to admonish the brethren, put them in memory of these things, as we've recently talked about, and we'll even touch on in the sermon this morning. But Paul had been discussing that in 1 Timothy chapter 5, and so some are surprised to learn there are widows the church is simply not responsible for. You agree with that? That's what Paul's dealing with it in 1 Timothy chapter 5. Let's begin, just begin with verse 1, because he begins to talk about this issue in verse 3. Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger men as brethren, the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters, with all purity. Honor widows that are widows indeed. Now, the New King James Version says, honor widows that are really widows. But he's going to qualify that. I wouldn't have an idea of the distinction between a widow and a widow indeed, as the King James Version puts it, except the Bible qualified that for me, and he's going to do that. But if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. To show piety at home and to repay. Is that word requite? New King James Version says repay. Now she that is a widow indeed is unqualified and desolate trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. And these things give in charge that they may be blameless. But if any, and here's a text for one of your references, but if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel or a non-believer. Let not a widow be taken into the number under 60 years old. How old is that? 60. Good. Having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works, if she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. But the younger widows, who would be a younger widow? Good job. That's the context of it. But the younger widows refuse, for they have begun to wax, or for when rather, they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they have cast off their first faith. And then he goes on to talk about them. Notice widows who do not fall under the responsibility of the church. Let me pause here and ask this. Are there widows that I could help out of my pocket, but the church could not help? Are the widows that I could on a consistent basis, out of my pocket support, but the church could not? Sure. And so notice some who are not the responsibility of the church to take care of. A widow who has a family to meet her needs. 1 Timothy 5 and in verse 4. A widow who does not meet certain criteria. We just talked about that. She loves the saints. She's brought up children. She diligently followed every good work. Verses 5 through 10. A widow who is not a Christian. You agree with that? We're talking about the care of the church now.
Oh, you're saying that a widow...
Just in general, a widow.
Yeah,
because you're not a member of the church.
No, you cannot.
Can I help her out of my pocket?
Yes, you can.
There's a reason why you have to see the distinction in that. Some of these passages are imperative to see that distinction. 1 Corinthians 16 verses 1 and 2. Now concerning the collection for the saints. I give this challenge to anybody. Find any example in the New Testament of benevolence being done where the church gave it that it went to someone who is not a member of the church. I got a chart. If I remember, I'll give to you next time. The context was always... Now, that doesn't mean that on an individual basis out of my pocket that I can't help someone. We're talking about the collective, the church treasure. That's what I'm talking about. They always gave, when Christians gave, it always went to the necessity of saints. Can you think of an exception to that in the New Testament? Where there was an exception to the church sending aid, rendering aid to someone who is not a Christian. There's not any. Now again, don't miss the point. That is not to say that I don't have a responsibility of what I do with my money. But we're talking about what God has authorized a treasury to be used for. And you can start in Acts chapter 2 all the way through and just look at every one of those. And I'll try to remember to get that chart for you. Now watch 1 Timothy 5:16 again. If any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them. And what's the rest of that? Let not the church be charged that they may relieve them that are widows. What? If that passage in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse 16 does not show the distinction between the individual and the church work, I don't know what does. Because the first part he's talking about, if any man, it's the individual, it's not the church. If any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them, well, let's just take them out of the picture and read it, have widows, let the church relieve them. Will that work? No. Let them, that's an individual word, relieve them, and let not the church be charged. Now, why is that important to see that? Why is it important to see that? You have a collective action and an individual action. Because everything that the individual does is not a collective action. When this person who believed had widows and relieved them, was that the church doing it? Yes or no?
No.
No. Therefore, just because it's an individual action doesn't mean that the church is doing it. Because he said, let him relieve them, that the church be not charged. But sometimes, brethren, just for various reasons, don't see that. And they just say, well, let the church just take care of it. Well, he's saying, don't do that. Now, sometimes you'll have something that is responsibility of a family, but the family will not do it. You see that point? Yes, it's the family's responsibility to require, repay their parents, but sometimes kids don't do it. Well, it's not the church's responsibility then because the children won't do it. But can I help out of my pocket? Well, sure I can. But we're talking about a collective action. And when God says it's an individual action, you can't take that and make it a collective action. If you do, you violate what God says about it. Do you agree with that point? That you cannot take an individual action and put it off on the church and be right. Unless the Bible authorizes that. But there's no authority to do that, and we can't do that. Bernice? And along with that, the point is that you have to have authority about that. If the Bible doesn't authorize it, we can't do it.
Exactly.
Chris?
I know that today some might refer to men as widows. Is there any application of that? Because I noticed that, you know, the term she is used in reference a lot of this. Is that applicable at all to men that might? Do we have any instances of that, or is that called something else potentially?
I'll answer the question with a question. In the context of it, would widowers be included in that? Just solely based on the context of 1 Timothy chapter 5?
No.
No. How do we know that?
They would be able to support themselves.
Okay.
Would they indeed not be?
There you go. And that qualified it because what he has under discussion is she had to have been the wife of one husband Now, if someone were to say, like, you know, I know you're not, but I'm saying it. Someone were to say, but I think, you know, in all fairness, that would include men in that. Though the qualification is given about she must be the wife of one husband, but if that argument would work, guess what someone's going to do with 1 Timothy chapter 3, having been the husband of one wife? Well, in all fairness, I think that should include women. Well, that works, yeah. You see what I'm saying? He qualifies that. But again, there's a difference. Sometimes there are things that I'm at liberty to do with my funds that God has not given to the church to do. And so you may have a widower that needs help. Guess what I can do? I can help her. Guess what some of us can do to meet that need? We can get together and help her. There's nothing wrong with that. But specifically in 1 Timothy chapter 5, he's discussing a widow.
Very gender specific.
That's right. That's right. So distinction between the work of the church and the work of individuals. There are familial responsibilities that each must fulfill. I don't want to leave this point without talking about some of the things that you're going to have to deal with, and I've had to deal with, and will continue to deal with, when it comes to the use of the Lord's money. We've already pointed out that we have to have authority for what we do. If the scriptures are silent, that does not authorize us to do what he's silent on. That forbids us to do it. If we add to what he's silent on, we're guilty of adding to the scriptures, right? And so if God doesn't address it, then I can't do it. I can't just assume anything. Can't speculate about it. We have to let God deal with that. Now, sometimes, the reason I wanted to mention, go back to Deuteronomy 24, is because sometimes you'll talk to folks and they'll say, that, listen, God in the Old Testament always cared that, or always commanded that his people take care of the orphans and the widows. Is that true? Sure is. We've already established that. But what they want to say, and the reason I wanted to go back to Deuteronomy 24, is I've had folks that I've talked with who say the church treasury can be used to help those who are not members of the church, widows and orphans. We'll go back to Deuteronomy 24 and talk about the gleaning of the crops and leaving the corners. And say, look here, when they had a corner, they had to make provision for the fatherless and the widows. Why will Deuteronomy 24 not work for that argument? It's very simple.
That's the individual thing that they left.
So that belongs to that person who's leaving that for those people.
That's right. And so, say for example, they had a field, and they had the crops. He said they were to reserve the corners. Don't glean it all. Don't take all of it. The children of Israel did not have one national crop. If they want to try to parallel something, that still wouldn't work. But it wasn't as though there was one national crop for Israel, and the whole group of Israel took care out of one crop, the fatherless and the widows. That was on an individual basis. When I went to glean my crop, that's what I had to do. When Lowell went to harvest his, that's what he had to do. On an individual basis, they were doing that. Now, even if they had a storehouse, and they put crops there, and out of that storehouse they gave to the fatherless and the widows, why would that still not work? To show that this side the cross were permitted to do out of the Lord's money what he didn't authorize.
You have an example of that in Boaz. Concerning Ruth and her gleaning.
Okay. But it was on an individual? Yeah. Good. And the reason that still wouldn't work this side of the cross is because even if they had a storehouse, and all the children of Israel brought into that storehouse collectively, wheat and water, to provide for the needs of the orphans and the widows, that would have nothing whatsoever to do with the church today. The same way when they used mechanical instrumental music in the Old Testament had nothing on earth to do with what the church is to do today. So why thought they did that? Deuteronomy 24 doesn't authorize that. All that shows is that God had provisions made for how orphans and widows were to be cared for, and it was to be done through individuals. That's the point.
See a parallel, Donnie, with that. And, you know, when God's under the old law, everyone gave, you know, they tithed. They did compile and put together resources, but it was for God's work. It was for the Levites. It didn't feed the widows and the children. It was used only for his work.
Good. It had, just like it was mentioned earlier, that time goes too quick. That it was specifically to be used as God had made mention. Two passages in the New Testament that are the most commonly used passages to try to show that God has commanded the church to give from the treasury to care for the orphans and the widows would be what? Galatians 6, verse 10, and James 1, verse 27. As we have opportunity, therefore, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. Well, so then he's writing, since he's writing to the church is of Galatia, and the church is authorized then to do good. And isn't it good, isn't it doing good to take from the Lord's money and give to orphans and the widows? He said, let us do good unto all men.
Well, in the context, Donnie, he's talking to individuals to not grow weary.
Yeah.
He's talking to them to not grow weary and to do good as you have opportunities. The context has been an individual.
Yeah. Would all men include saints and sinners?
Yes.
Because then he qualified, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. But the point is, it's an individual. He's talking about individual work. The context of the chapter sets that out. Brethren, if any man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness. Consider thyself lest also be tempted. Bear you one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. It's individual, individual, individual. Then get here and say it's collective. That won't work. And then in James chapter 1, verse 27, if any man thinketh himself to be, or if any man,
pure religion,
thank you, sir. Pure religion undefiled before God and the fatherless is this, before God and the fatherless is to visit the fatherless and the widows, their affliction, and to what?
Keep himself
unspotted from the world. James, the context, James is written to an individual. And on an individual basis, and so as you have opportunity, as you do, as I do, that's the individual command. There's another passage that we really need to touch on, but we don't have time today. So if it's okay with you, for next week, we'll begin by looking at another passage or two concerning this and then move on. And I'm going to say this for emphasis' sake. Don't hear us say when we say that the church is not authorized from the treasury to help orphans and widows, that we don't believe in doing that. I had a man say, well, you folks, if a baby was dropped at the front door of the building, wasn't helping. That's not what we're saying. We're just simply saying, we're talking about whose responsibility God said it was. That's the point. Yes, we would help, but it would be on an individual basis. Don't miss that point. Don't let someone make it an emotional argument and say, and by the way, like James chapter 1, verse 27, the few seconds we've got left, when it's here's an argument that sometimes we try to use with you. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. Here's their question. Can the church practice pure and undefiled religion, yes or no? Be careful. Because if you just say yes, then what are you doing with James 1:27?
It's individuals. It's made up of individuals.
See, that's the point that you've got to explain to them. James 1:27 is not charging the church to practice pure and undefiled religion. Now, that don't mean that we can be heathens and do what's contrary to the to God collectively in worship. But James 1:27 is not an admonition to the church. It's an admonition to the individual. And so, anyway, we'll stop there and then, with second bell already been written. We'll stop there and pick up next week. Be sure to fill your book out, and we'll start there and then talk about if any man draw back from Hebrews chapter 10, verse 38. Appreciate your good attention.